Carrie says.
Oh, she didn't bring it up.
Put them in for a couple scrimmages and one game.
It might be work that needs to be done there as far as like reaching out policy. So, you know, it's like, you know, putting this on the table and see how much people say like this.
He's getting mad at
how many are in the language.
So Craig, are you on the benefits committee and policy?
She's here too.
You were just.
I'm on the next session on all.
You are on in every committee. I get all of them. If they're set up.
Once they're set up.
Because I saw your name on the three last. Okay, so yeah.
They would do first string would play.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the employee assembly meeting. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Please feel free to continue to get lunch or whatever you need to do and get settled. First thing for the day is to approve our last meeting's minutes. I know that we had a couple corrections, both attendance and spelling issue that were corrected. Is there any dissent to approving last meeting's minutes? No dissent, the minutes are approved. We'll begin today. I'd like to discuss very briefly kind of plan for the agenda. We had a couple guest speakers that we were notified about kind of last minute, which is fine. But first I'd like to introduce Jeremy Thomas, who is from Cornell Real Estate. He'll be presenting to us on the front end of the meeting from there, and he's going to be talking about the North Campus residential expansion. After that, I'm going to call for a vote to go into executive session for about 10 to 15 minutes. If that's approved, we will do that. And then from there, we're going to be covering Resolution 1, which is the budget, Resolution 2, which is the consolidation of the committees, and then followed up by a committee report from Carrie and Communications and Awards. So hopefully she'll be joining us on Zoom if she's not already there. And then finally, Kate Supran is going to be giving us a quick update about a community issue that we all need to be aware of and share with our constituents. So without further ado, Jeremy, the floor is yours, sir.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. My name is Jeremy Thomas. I run the real estate department for the university. And at some other time, I can tell you more about what we do as a department. But for now, I'm going to walk through what we're doing on North Campus. Now, you may have heard a lot. There's certainly a lot out in the public, and we're going through a public approval process right now. And I thought it'd be, we thought it would be good. My colleague Gary Stewart thought it'd be good to engage you all around the plan for this project and see if you have any questions about it. And if I know the answer, I'll answer. If not, we'll get back to you with the answer. A lot of this is sort of technical energy stuff, and I rely a lot on some of our others as well. I know you may have spoken with Ryan Lombardi a little bit about the campus master plan for a student campus life and how this is a spinoff of that, but this is really grounded in that process. They went through a very sort of intensive process identifying the housing and other needs of our community. And this is sort of the implementation of that, at least in the first steps around the housing that our freshman sophomore, sorry, first year sophomores, especially need on this campus. So as I move through this, let me see here. Hopefully move through this. There we go. A little bit of a delay there. Okay. So why are we even talking about additional dorms on North Campus? A big part of this is meeting the current and future demand for on-campus housing. We know from experience that first years come in and they learn very quickly that if they want to find housing for their sophomore year, they need to start looking in the external market. And there's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress that brings on. And you know, our learnings here are that we need to support their desire to be on campus for a longer period of time as they become sort of, as they learn what it is to be a student and step away from home and really provide them with the right kind of community to live in. So, you know, first years are currently, for example, living in townhomes, and that's not really the ideal environment. The ideal environment is in more of a dorm setting where they can walk past common areas, sit down, meet people, become engaged, and have some interactions and a space that facilitates that kind of interaction. So that's sort of that cohesive community and student experience is really critical in those first 2 years. And we really want to provide that level of support in the formative years as you start your education here at Cornell University. The other aspect of this is we have some deferred maintenance projects. Balch Hall, for example, it needs to be renovated. Some critical items that need to happen there. We want to increase the energy efficiency of a lot of our buildings. In order to do that, we need to be able to move people out and go in and handle those buildings. We can't do that right now because the housing is so tight. So this will allow us to make upgrades to a number of our existing facilities as well. And finally, there's a lot of sort of the meta narrative out in the community for a very long time has been, Cornell, you're not housing enough for your students. Why aren't you building more housing? And we're finally delivering on that. There's some considerable and daunting housing goals that the county, the town, and the city have around additional supply, around this becoming a more affordable community. A lot of studies around that. And our hope is that as we provide more housing for our students as they move onto campus, that in the greater market out here, that'll start to turn a little bit more and free up housing for faculty, for staff, for others that are out there and would just like to live closer to the core, but can't afford to do so. So that's sort of another corresponding goal that a lot of people outside of the Cornell community also care about, in addition to within our community. If you have questions as I'm going along, please raise up your hand. I'm happy to address them as I move along. Here's a bit of display. I'm sorry, it's a little far away, but these are the two development sites that we're going to have. So the community here will be an 800-bed sophomore community that includes dining, a new dining facility that will replace the dining facility at Robert Purcell. And it'll be a state-of-the-art dining facility along with a new indoor recreation gym kind of, you know, workout facility as well. So that'll be the sophomore site. It's on what's currently the CC lot. And that'll be the site for that. The 1200 bed first year site is on the fields that are adjacent to Appel Commons. Those fields won't be replaced on a one-to-one basis. You know, one of the things that we've learned is that those fields are unusable a lot of the year. In fact, if you went out there, you'd probably sink a foot right now, I'm guessing, given the rain that we've had recently. So we're going to replace, and not all of those fields, but one of the fields will actually become a turf field that will be usable year-round in the evenings and actually be a lot more accessible to the students that use those recreation facilities. So that's just the basic layout. You can see here we span three municipalities. The majority of the development is within the city of Ithaca, 77%, 23% is within the town of Ithaca. And we do some landscaping. We don't actually have buildings in the Village of Cayuga Heights, but we do have a footprint and we'll be disturbing some earth over there, and it comes right up to that line. So we're working with all three municipalities. The city is the lead agency on the approvals, and we've been in front of them several times, our planning board. And we'll be in front of them next Tuesday night for a public hearing around the project.
Quick question. How much parking are you losing, and then how much parking are you gaining?
Let me get you those exact numbers because I don't know them off the top of my head. CC lot is actually quite underutilized. There's more than 200 spaces there, and only about 90 of them are utilized. And we know within our inventory that we have more than enough parking spaces. And I know that this is an issue that this group has actually talked about and is particularly sensitive to, and we're very sensitive to the loss of parking. For projects like this and other projects that we have on campus. So they're actually, Bridget Brady is conducting a very thorough parking study just to make sure we have parking in the right spaces. We know we have enough volume, but it's a matter of where they're at. So yeah, there'll be some parking loss, and then we're building some of it back in and around some of the buildings as well. But I can get you exact numbers on that and follow up around that for sure. A lot of the public comment has been around energy, and I just want to take a few moments to walk through the plan of how we're going to both provide energy through the project and the efficiency of the buildings themselves. You can actually see all of, there's very sort of thorough and in-depth information up on the city and town planning websites that detail our energy analysis, greenhouse gas accounting, comparison with other sort of national local guidance, and a comparison of if we were to use different kinds of heating and cooling options as well. And we have a perspective, and we've studied all of this, and we have a path that we think is not only preferred to the university, but in fact, the most environmentally responsible path. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that is right now and why we believe that to be the case. So when you think about our carbon footprint, we really look at three areas. The systems that are providing heating and cooling and electricity to the university, the design of the buildings so that they're utilizing that in the most efficient way, and practices, how we all behave inside these buildings and how we're using water, electricity, power, and making sure that we have the best kinds of behavior as well and educating around that. And I'll talk a little bit just about energy systems. So first thing I do want to mention is that everything, all the cooling that happens on campus is done through lake source cooling. So it's really the benchmark, most efficient way. We're bringing up cold water from the lake. It circulates through campus, provides all the chilling that we need. We're not using sort of all the environmentally yucky stuff that's inside an air conditioning unit or condensing unit, refrigerants and that sort of thing. And you're not using electricity to power those units as well. So it's a highly efficient source of cooling. The other thing we have is what we call our combined heat and power plant. And I think one of the major distinguishing things that we have is that we actually have a district energy system. So this building doesn't need its own heating and cooling sources independent of the rest of campus. That heating and cooling is done centrally, and it comes and it's piped out to all of the buildings on campus. And that's a highly efficient system and allows us to actually plug in new technology, new sort of sources of energy right into that system and serve the entire campus. So typically, if you're sort of powering a project that isn't a part of that, you have a gas or some kind of turbine that creates electricity and then it creates power. What we actually do and increases efficiencies is we're capturing waste heat. All the heat that's generated in creating electricity is then recaptured to create steam and all the other components that provide heating to campus. And then after that, it's also, we capture additional steam instead of wasting steam to provide additional power and additional electricity back to campus. So all of this is an added value that creates a highly, highly efficient system. So we are using natural gas for this new development because natural gas is what initially powers these turbines, but it's minimized to a great extent. Just as an example, we're increasing our footprint of built environment on campus by 4%, and we're increasing our use of energy by just 1.4%. Now, a lot of the, there's certain advocates that feel that using any natural gas is not a responsible method, and we understand that, and we actually agree that you want to minimize use of natural gas because it emits methane and has an impact on the environment. So what we've done is we've just studied how else could we possibly do this, just to understand how can we mitigate that use of gas in the most dynamic way. I'm sorry, there's a little switch going. And we've looked at, one of the things that we've been asked to do is use just electricity from the grid, because the feeling is that over time, the grid's going to become more, have more renewables built in within it, and provide something like air source heat pumps on the roof of our buildings or ground source heat pumps. And we'll get to that in a minute. But one of the issues is that if you're tapping into the grid, you have 40% of the energy that's created in that grid is actually done by burning gas, oil, and coal. And when you add load, you're utilizing gas, oil, and coal. All the other sources are fixed. And so if we were to add this and connect directly to the grid and not use our efficient systems, we would actually be generating more carbon into the environment. The other thing I do want to say is that we are utilizing new technology, new building standards in all of our sort of campus design that can utilize lower heat water. And in the future, as we do things, you'll hear a little bit about our hopes to use earth source heating. As we are able to tap into new technologies, all of this infrastructure is going to allow us to utilize renewables in the grid or renewables within our own system. So a couple of thoughts about the buildings that we're doing here. These are going to perform 30% better than the building code requires from an energy perspective. These will be the best performing residential buildings on the Cornell campus today. That includes New York NYC Tech. We have a very highly efficient residential building down there. And we're putting the same kinds of systems within these buildings so that they can be as efficient as what we have in New York City. As I mentioned, the low temperature structure that we're putting in place here is adaptable for the future, so that as you get additional renewables in the future, we can utilize them as well. And along with electrical and plumbing systems that are highly efficient, a very tight building envelope, and managing of internal loads so that we can have the smallest footprint possible within the development. This is just a quick comparison to a lot of the advocates that are pushing for not using gas in a development. For some of the developments, the high rises you see downtown going up, for example, air source heat pumps are a great solution, and they are the most environmentally friendly solution from an emissions perspective. They'll be powered by the grid, and they're by far the best and most environmental solution to heat and cool a building that's isolated on its own. Difference is when you're part of a district energy system like we have. We actually did the analysis of if we were to use the fan coil units, the green line there, versus air or ground source heat pumps. The air and ground source heat pumps, because of the efficiency of our district energy system, would actually emit more greenhouse gases at the end of the day. So that is principally the reason that we've proposed this as a methodology to heat and cool the buildings on North Campus. And I know that's a real quick kind of rundown of it, but we did want to sort of communicate how we're talking about this and the rationale behind some of the decisions we made in our proposal around North Campus. Again, sustainable operations. So we're always trying to do better and work with students and understand our buildings in a really dynamic way, so that if something isn't performing the way that it should, we're going in and from a facilities perspective correcting it, but also making sure that people are doing things like turning off their lights, or in fact we have motion sensors so that they go off automatically, and really responsive ways of doing that. Just a couple of other, I think, important points. We're looking at, as I mentioned, a 1.4% increase in energy use when this project comes online. Before the door even opens on this building, we'll have reduced our campus energy use by at least that much. So we've been asked about offsets, and there's tricky ways that you can do offsets in purchasing power from Wisconsin or something like that. But a lot of that is tricky accounting, and we're committed to actually within our portfolio itself and within our buildings and the improvements we make to them to lowering our energy footprint as much by at least as much that this will increase it. So before these even open, the activities that we have planned between now and 2021 will reduce our footprint, so that our energy use will actually not even go up, relative to today when this comes online. And that's been a trend. We've grown significantly since the year 2000. And our footprint, even though our footprint has grown significantly, all of these activities that we're, we've enacted through our campus sustainability office and the way that we do business here has kept or lowered our actual energy use despite that growth. So that's all I have. If there's other questions, I'd be happy to hear them.
So I've got two quick questions, and I'd like to also say thank you for being here to share this information. I think as we get ready to see this expansion, it's going to impact many of the staff community as well as the students as well. One, can we get a copy of the slides?
Yes.
And two, with regard to your office in particular, being staff members of Cornell, how is there a way that the employee assembly can assist you all in the work that you're doing?
Thank you for asking that. So I think that, you know, this is sort of up to everybody, but we do have a public hearing coming up, and I think, you know, we feel that this is a critical development for the university. We've done our hard work, we've done our due diligence to figure out the best way and the most environmentally friendly way to do it. And, you know, as this goes, when you're going through approvals, you know, opponents show up and supporters don't. So if people feel comfortable writing letters or showing up and supporting the project, that would be tremendously helpful. And even just speaking to the need of the community from a wider housing perspective, you know, employees live here or want to live here and live close, and the cost of housing in that market is something that I feel and that I think is really really an important discussion. And you know, so if people feel comfortable lending a voice of support to the project, that's always something that is good for the people that are doing approvals to hear. If you feel like you need more information about the project, let us know and we can answer questions and provide that information. So we're always happy. We're being as transparent as we possibly can, and sharing as much information as we can.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Sure.
Any other questions, Chris?
Sustainability is something that's important to me. I think probably everybody Cornell wants to save the planet. With new building opportunities like this, building energy, 80% is the biggest of the energy that we use at Cornell is related to buildings. And recycling is getting harder. Like they just recently, it's now like if there's one not cleaned out jar of peanut butter in a dump truck full of stuff, they will just throw that all away.
Yeah.
Is there any opportunities as we, you know, you move forward in building planning to integrate things like a local, some form of local recycling and composting so that even maybe student workforce can be hands-on involved in that process? Because even like some sorting your stuff in the dining hall is like a good introduction, but if people were really living it and could integrate some of that stuff into potential coursework. I know square footage doesn't really allow for like a giant recycling center, but is that something at all where in, you know, I put it in the garbage can and now it goes away if you had the opportunity in a building or a space was like, I get to be part of the process if you were as a student?
I think that's a great idea, and our sustainability department works really, really hard on that sort of that part, that educational part. And that education needs to be reinforced with the right kind of things in place so that it makes it easy for people, right? So I think it's a great idea, and I want to assume that they're thinking that through, but I'll make sure that they are, that they're thinking about it. And you know, as you roll out new buildings and you have new people coming in, it's a great opportunity to educate people and to provide them with the resources that they need to make smarter, environmentally friendly decisions like that. And the dining center, you know, I think our dining group does a good job with that. And I think this is a really big opportunity for that. And this is something that the sustainability team has said thinks a lot about, because you can have the best systems in the world. If people aren't educated around them, you know, it only has so much impact.
Thank you.
Due to time considerations, we'll take one more question, and then if there are other questions, we'll collect those so that we can forward those to Jeremy.
Yeah, I do have a handout I'll leave with you. It has my email on it, so feel free to reach out to me at any time.
Okay, Tarek?
So yeah, I have a question about numbers. Basically, what is the percentage of people we're going to house based on our population? So if I remember correctly, you have like beds for sophomores.
Yeah, so right? Thank you for asking. I kind of glossed over some of the numbers. So there are 2,000 beds in this development. That will enable us as a university to house all of our first year and sophomore students within the campus system. So that includes the new development. It also includes affiliated housing, the Greek system, some of the program houses and all of that. At that point, we will be able to house all of our first and second year students on campus. And in fact, starting with the class of 2021, it will be mandatory for students to live on campus, which is actually a change. We've seen that as a critical piece, but those numbers will get us to the ability to do that, along with some actual enrollment growth within the underclass size. We're talking about 900 total enrollment growth across all 4 years over a period of time. We'd be able to accommodate that within the development.
So what percent of first year and sophomores are housed on campus now?
Right now, again, it's not mandatory at this time, but right now about 99.5% of first years choose to live on campus. Mm-hmm. And I believe sophomores, it's around 60%. So we'll be able to get that up to 100%.
Well, Jeremy, thank you very much for being here. If there are other questions, I'd ask that you please forward those to Hey, and then we can get those to Jeremy's office and go from there. So at this time, I'd like to make a motion to move into executive session. In order to do that, we need a vote of 50% plus one. So is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
All right. So any opposed to that motion? No. Okay. So at this time, let's take about 2 minutes, and I would ask our guest to please leave. Ex officio members are welcome to stay.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
So I will call this meeting back to order. I think the first item for discussion now is the fiscal year 18 budget review. This budget was available online. I hope that you all had a moment to review it. There's also an opportunity now to discuss it and talk about this budget for the year. So it's $9,650 for the entire fiscal year. I'm opening the floor for further discussion on the budget. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, comments?
So you saw the budget that was sent out on Monday. Okay. That Hey sent out. That would have been our original one with all the older committees and all the numbers. Again, the 9,650 doesn't change or edit. As we've mentioned, that budget is the total number is what's set in security, what we vote on. Flexibility and wiggle room within the lines are always existent. Then the one for you that is part of resolution one that I am submitting as the vice chair for finance and operations goes through and takes that total 9,650. But as you see in line 10002, it combines communications and awards, as well as then line 20001, combines benefits and policy. Other than that, it all stays and remains the same. Questions?
Is the $2,500 for the president's address to staff for food?
Food, rental space, vouchers.
Okay, so it's sort of like those logistics expenses.
We have, yeah. Anything else? Go ahead, Tarek.
What is the personnel policy 2001? What is that?
The $100?
Yeah, what is it?
Has it normally been used? Not too often. I mean, printing, if you happen to say we're meeting through Zoom, but then one really important meeting, we're going to have a physical one and I want to buy them pizza. Things like that, you would have $100 to play with that you would work with the Office of Assembly to utilize. Carrie, you had a comment?
Just to the question about the president's address budget, there are additional expenses that come out of university relations, at least historically, including this year, thank goodness. For AV, including live broadcasting, recording the event, and live captioning. So just for a total picture, that 2,500 largely goes towards towards the lunches. But we'll have, I think we'll have some left over, but there are additional expenses that luckily UNICOM and University Relations pay for.
Kevin?
So just because we have new representatives, what was the 2017-2018 budget? Did we go over?
We did not, no. We felt that as when we had in the exec, you had to log off quickly. We felt that because the final numbers were pretty much tally the same, that we always had the flexibility. There was no need to review it at this time.
May I comment?
Yes.
There were some funds left, sort of the discretionary funds that were used largely to support the breakfast at the staff events over the summer. That came from last year's budget.
We try to use it up. I mean, I think one year also communications, we used and bought more the name tag badges, shirts, some of the post-it notes we give out at presentations. I think we had to update our, like the tablecloth or, you know, things like that. Again, $9,650 is actually not a lot of money to play with. So any other thoughts, questions?
Good question. Let's move this thing forward.
All right.
I can do that. I move to close the debate, referred to as calling the question.
Second.
Second.
Right. Okay. So now we move to vote. Okay. All those in favor of passing this budget? All those dissent? Okay. No dissent.
Seeing no dissent.
Seeing no dissent. Any abstentions?
Did we see what Carrie did? Carrie?
I voted yes.
Thank you. We didn't see you. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
We felt your,
we felt your positive vibe.
Okay.
Great. So thank you, everyone. The budget has been passed.
It's your first resolution.
Yay. There's Carrie.
Oh, sorry.
Not anymore.
Who's the other person?
I know. Who's that?
Is that Karen?
Karen.
No,
Karen. Karen.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Karen. Oh, her face.
Oh, she's behind the lock.
Karen. Did we write down she's here?
Yeah. Yes. Did you actually take a roll?
I took an informal roll. I just wrote everybody's name down.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to resolution two, which I sponsored. So am I allowed to do? Okay. So this we've discussed before, in order to consolidate the committees from 10 to 7, we have resolution 2, which establishes these 7 committees. This is available for review. I'll bring it to question. Does anybody have any questions or concerns about our 2, the 10, our committees into the 7? Tech.
So I was looking at line 38. The merged committees will have the same charges, membership criteria. So my the part I would like to debate maybe, I mean, I mentioned this over the retreat. Can we maybe update the charge? Because there was a sentiment that maybe there was a lot of overlap between the kind of committees, maybe welfare and policy.
Yep.
So to draw these lines, so it might contradict with line 38 as far as updating, not updating the chart.
Well, at the moment, we haven't gotten rid of them officially. They're still part of our bylaws. And,
yes.
And so those committees are there. So that would have to be updated.
Later.
So you are tasked, you would have to with your team, and that would eventually next year go through.
So that's another resolution.
As part of the resolution, there's the mandate, not mandate, but the charge to the committee chairs to report back with any.
Oh, I see.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's your that you think that committee merged will work well, and here's your report that includes we found these redundancies. Here's our new charge. We want to do this formally. That would be part of your
report back.
So follow up on this briefly. basically benefits. So benefits and policy are combining. So I'm gonna combine. I'm gonna look at benefits charge and just work with whatever is given, and that's it.
Or basically, new. I mean, you could come up with something interesting.
But so I mean, I understand that this is a temporary thing, right? For a year until it's formalized permanently. So don't you have to wait till the end of the year is up before you actually merge it? Or can you just unmerge it back if needed?
Well, technically, we're not. What we're doing is for this year, this is how we're going to work. So we're not deleting or getting rid of them from our official.
So we're just establishing a new.
Right. If we're going to move that forward, then next time around, yes, right, they would be in theory deleted and it would be a new committee with that name and the charge of recommendations, if we all vote to move that forward.
So for this year, I think, you know, keeping the two charges side by side is the way we need to move forward.
Yes,
or not?
Gina.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin.
No.
I think if for transparency and clarity's sake, the way it would be, we would list the new seven committees and then in their charges, and they'd be listed as temporary committees per whatever it is, EAR2.
Yeah.
So that anybody could look and see why you're doing this on a temporary basis. And then be really specific about, you know, listing the two charges.
Right.
Which gives, it should, rather than limit your scope and authority, it should really expand it.
Right.
So that you've got a lot of wiggle room to do the things that you think would be most impactful with this new model. Really, to give some space and authority to you all to dig deep into how you want these committees to be most effective. So don't think of this as a structured limitation, rather than it's really meant to expand the possibilities.
Right.
So just to follow up on this, just start to work and experiment, like, you know, with it. Don't be restricted with charges and report on that, you know, where the success, plus and deltas, I guess. You know,
Aren't we essentially piloting this as another process?
Yeah.
I think that's the way that we've got to think about it, is we're piloting another process or another possibility.
Yeah.
And then the end of the pilot, I mean, that's the thing.
Right.
We'll determine that. So
it's not like we're deleting, closing off. We're not like erasing the current charges in any way.
Right.
This resolution that Hey kindly put up, and if you look at line 52 on, it is to empower these new temporary seven committees to allow for streamlining or growth, and to then moving forward after those chairs report and we can move forward in possible concrete structural changes.
We have a motion on the table. Has the motion been made?
No.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion to consolidate the committees on a trial basis as opposed by him.
Okay.
I second.
Guys are doing great.
Seeing the motion, call to vote.
Second.
I thought we were only on the third.
I'm sorry.
Second.
Yeah. I know you're excited. It's first resolution. So those in favor voting for resolution R2. Are you taking? No, I don't see Terry.
I'm just going to do it for fun.
Dissent?
It's like.
Okay.
Any dissent? Mm-hmm. Any abstentions? Seeing none, R2 has been passed. Congratulations. Hey.
Thanks.
I now give it back to you.
All right. Thank you all. So now let's move on to discussion on the president's address to staff. I'm going to turn this over to Carrie to discuss a little further.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you guys hear me, see me? Not sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, wheels are in motion. Just to recap, in case it's not burned into your brain, the event is October 9th, which is a Tuesday, noon to 1. Our hope is that everyone will be able to participate, attend, etc. And I think, the communications committee, I have my final list now, and those meetings are going to be on the calendar. We only had our first meeting on there, but we're going to be meeting next week. And one of the action items is to identify the volunteer task list for the event. And so once I have that, just be on the lookout for that to the members list. Just like this summer, when we asked for volunteers for various tabling, we'll just have a list of things that we could use help with. And my hope is that we can have your help to do things like help give out the lunches, help with the Q&A, help, people get into their seats, just greeters, that kind of thing. I'm also going to ask this year for someone to take a good count for me to see how many people we have in the atrium and all that, because last year we were sort of just ballparking it, and maybe that will help us with projections. But so we will be asking for volunteers next week. The event has been posted on the events calendar, on Cornellcast. I mentioned earlier we're recording and live streaming that. It's been posted on Facebook. Please talk it up. We are going to have other promotions via digital signage, via email, like last year. So we're going to get the word out pretty far and wide, hopefully. Nancy has what is basically a pre-write advertising the event, going out in the Paw Print / Chronicle. So we're moving. There's the wheels are turning. So that's part of the update. The award winner for the Staff Recognition Award, we voted on that online, and you guys all got that announcement. And so we're working with Andrea. Thanks, Andrea, who nominated the group to notify them and figure out what all we're gonna say. I've got a question here, Karen. So Karen is asking if lunch will be given out beforehand this year. What we're talking about is guarding and hiding the lunches.
Guarding the food.
until the event closes, and so people on their way out can come and grab lunch. So we're going to sort of have them there, covered up, like a real big, beautiful surprise. And then they'll get them at the end. Just because we don't have a super good projection last year, we got really great attendance. It may have been in part because it was President Pollack's first year. We're not sure if we're going to maintain that this year. I hope we will. It would be great. In case we do, we're supplementing lunches, or at least the plan right now is to supplement lunches with vouchers, so that if we do happen to run out, we're going to have lunch vouchers that can be used at various Cornell dining locations, so nobody gets shut out of the food. One thing we talked about is doing an RSVP to say, I'm coming and this is the lunch I would like, but that's still TBD. I'm not sure if we're going to do that, actually. Let's see, what else? So the award is in progress. Promotions are in progress.
I have a question, Carrie.
Oh, yes.
In regards, without disclosing the winner, the George Peter Award, has that been approved?
No.
No, okay.
That's not related to the president's address, per
yeah,
se.
Yeah,
no, that's not okay, the president's yeah. address, but there was a vote on that. We can discuss that later.
I do have a...
Sorry. Just, Pilar, what was that?
Let's stay on the president's address for now. There's some questions on that. And then we can, if you're going to do a separate communications report. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so if there's questions on the president's address.
Okay, go for it.
My question is, what is the format of the actual address in the Q&A? Can anybody ask a question? Does it have to be written down? How does one... and who introduces the president and sort of like how does that process unfold?
Okay, that's a great question. So the basic run of show is we have Craig do the, he makes some welcome remarks, just general sort of state of the assembly type of thing. Glad you're here. He's going to turn it over to the presenter, possibly Andrea. I don't know if she's going to nod her head or not, but we'll talk about it, I guess. He's going to turn it over to the folks who are presenting the employee recognition, the staff recognition award. So there'll be some brief few minutes of remarks about the group who won the award. That gets presented. At that point, Craig comes back up and will introduce the president. The president will have about 30 minutes for, I think it's 30 minutes for prepared remarks. It's either 15 or 30. And then after that, we go into the Q&A. So now online through CornellCast, which is how we're doing the live broadcast, there's a form where anyone can go to ask a question in advance. So if it's anything like the past couple of years, we will already have a bunch of questions ready to go. Some of those are on the same theme, so we sort of like consolidate that or like summarize them. And so we'll already have a bunch, but so during the Q&A, we'll have at least one person monitoring the online questions. We'll be taking questions, have mics to pass around in the audience, so people from the audience can ask questions, and we'll sort of go back and forth between the in-person audience and the online questions. And so that person who's monitoring online will sort of raise their hand or be, you know, we'll come back around to them every couple minutes and let them ask one from the remote audience. And so we try to sprinkle it around. Again, if it's anything like last year, we had a ton of questions. And so there's almost like not enough time ever for these questions. So hopefully we'll get in more than last year, because last year was, again, President Pollack's first year, and there was a sensitivity around, you know, not really putting her, you know, on the spot for a lot of questions. And so we have more time blocked off this year, so I'm excited about that. And then, you know, ideally, anything that doesn't get answered, we try to follow up with the administration on that to get those answered. So, does that answer the question about the run of show?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Carrie. My concern is that questions get sort of diluted and aggregated, and individual questions or specific concerns are lost in the aggregation. So I just wanted to make sure that individuals could get up and ask a specific question. And, you know, and not have it sort of, years ago, we had to write it out, and then somebody picked it up and read it. And they sort of read it in a way that was, they could rephrase or, so anyway, it was
well,
weird.
Well, the people in the room will be able to ask their own questions. So there's no filter there, but as far as,
that was
as far
my
as
question, the filter.
Yeah, there's no, so I mean, you. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Ellen, do you have something?
Well, I just wanted to say that I don't think I received a communication about the award winner.
Like to vote, you mean?
For what award?
For the award that is given at
the president's address.
Yes.
There was the Qualtrics.
We voted, but I don't remember receiving the results.
So that came via email from the Office of Assemblies. I can forward it. I think it was either
sent to the body. It was sent to the exec.
Okay.
When did you come to everyone?
Okay.
Oh, okay. That's
so
my bad.
Can you just the winner? I mean, I'm assuming I know who it is, but
well, the problem is we have the son.
I think with the deference to our son reporter, if you just don't print who the award winner is.
There's no
Okay, there you go. Go for it, Carrie. Say who the winner is.
Oh, well, what's the formal name? Geez. I got to look up the
engine. That's all right.
Engineering project management within facilities and customer service. That's who got the most votes.
There you go. Yes.
It's the Summer Night 18 Construction Group that helps manage a number, not all, of the summer construction projects.
Right. Good job.
Is there interest in having us forward the results, the members list? I'm sorry, I thought that went out to everybody.
Not everybody's here, so.
It didn't, Carrie. You forwarded something to me directly from the exec, but
That's my bad. But anyway, congratulations to them.
It is a large group. I did notify Rick Burgess, and so we're in the process of trying to figure out how to best frame. Yeah. So.
Right. So, I mean, the thing about that award.
Surprise them.
Well, some the people thing about will be.
That award is not it's not like the George Peter Award, like it's a total surprise per se. We don't want to publicize or, you know, like scoop ourselves by announcing it in any, you know, like in the news or anything, but you know, people are notified and hopefully they'll have a nice big presence at the event. But so it's not like a hush hush surprise, like a surprise party, but I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, other questions about the event?
No.
Okay. Great.
Okay. All right. So there, after the president's address is stuff, we have new business, which is the Employee Celebration Day. There is a call for volunteers if anybody's interested in volunteering. That's also in October. So just let me know if that's something that you're interested in. Carrie, do you have anything to add about the employee celebration day?
My initial gut reaction was that we wouldn't have the cycles to really do a big, you know, tabling effort, just given the effort that's going into the president's address. But So I don't have anything planned exactly. I know Craig wants to have some presence there, but to me it's TBD at the moment. But definitely if you're planning to attend and you're interested in volunteering potentially, that's good to know. It would be helpful to know how many people are even available, whether it's worth trying to do something a little, you know, less informal.
What's the date?
It's October, what is it?
Six.
But I was going to say, given we do have a lot of work with the president's address, there is the spring. Isn't there a spring employee celebration? Mm-hmm. Perhaps our efforts and resources might be better if we aim for that one and just give this one a go. Two things in October. I don't know. That's my opinion. Andrea, you had your hand up.
Do we know who's managing the employee celebration for Office of Human Resources this year? Because it's not.
Yeah, it's not. It's for faculty. It's for everyone. I mean, it's not.
Right. There's someone's out on medical leave, so I don't know if who our contact is.
I don't know who is the contact.
Not Cheryl McGraw. I think Cheryl is.
Cheryl McGraw.
I don't believe
right, she's out.
She's out.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Right. And I think that would be the question is what would they want aside from a tabling? I know people volunteer, but it's not necessarily through the EA.
In years past, the EA has in en masse served food, you know, so that you are actually part of the folks that are helping to acknowledge our staff community.
Right.
So you wear your shirts or your name tags, and that might be an option, whether it's for this one or future. But really, it's picking the opportunity that, whether it's for tabling or serving food, lots of opportunities. But I think tying into what their needs are
would be important.
Right. Find out who the HR contact is. And that's an
okay. I can find it.
Great. So with this, I'd like to move on to Kate Supron, who wants to spend a couple of minutes discussing the Earth Source Heat Seismic Study that's about to begin
on the towns of Ithaca and Dryden.
So I have a letter. I don't know how much you guys know about earth source heat, but Cornell is looking into a very long-term research and facilities project of heating the campus through deep earth geothermal. The first phase of this is to do a seismic study of the geology in the area, and that's about to go forward. No drilling, there's just a big truck that drives around, a process truck that drives on roads and stops and like thumps the earth, and then it measures the seismic wave, which then shows, you know, I'm such a scientist with my art history degree, then they can map the geology underground. I have a letter that I brought to share with you guys today that went out to neighbors along the Vibrosis routes. I have to super apologize, and I can send a PDF of the map in color to you, maybe through Tina, because I got here and realized I had not hit color rather than black and white when I ran it through the copier. But the road route is basically Game Farm Road between Dryden Road and Ellis Hollow Road, and Stevenson Road between Game Farm and Turkey Hill. There's no like damage, it just might kind of look strange. In addition to taking the trucks out on the road, they've also put, there are some stationary seismometers going into locations, including Ithaca High School and Dryden High School, where the faculty and engineering staff on the seismic project are working with earth science teachers in those schools to share the data and analyze with the students in those communities. So it's both a little bit of science and public outreach. If you're interested in knowing more about earth source heat, the earth source heat website is referenced in the letter for earthsourceheat.cornell.edu. There's a wealth of information on there. I'm not the person to explain the project, but if at some point in the future, and I feel like I'm sure we could have someone from facilities come and share the information. But there's a link on the Earth Source Heat website to a public forum that was held at Green Star last spring. So if you want to dig into it, there are tremendous resources and information already available. So I'll leave my color map here. And would folks like me to send the actual color map to you so you can see the roots? Because in black and white, it's a little bit vague.
So my question was, requested, correct? Wasn't it a request to bring this to the EA?
Was it a request to bring this to the EA?
That's what it was.
Gina was present in the meeting where the request came up, that it just might be nice to share this information.
Yeah, because this is happening soon.
Right, that's what I was just asking.
And it was as staff members who live in the communities mm-hmm. that either may be impacted, or you might have neighbors or colleagues that are. And if anybody had questions, it was, you should know at least this is happening and have a resource for further information if you wanted it. So it's just trying to share the information with the staff community, and you all represent us.
So my, if that was the request, then it would be good if we had the online resource for it, the links that either it can be used in the communications, notifications, it could just be added. That's what I was just, either you wanted to just give it to us, or as an EA, we could promote it. And having the online resources, links.
I will follow up with Gina this afternoon and get.
Or Carrie as the communications.
Okay.
I don't forget about you, Carrie. Then we can just publicize it and use it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Wasn't this the same area that they were looking at for the community solar?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
adjacent.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there is a community solar. It's out.
If there are no other questions, I would like to adjourn for this meeting. There's 1:29. Adjourn.
Motion
to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
We're good. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.